Good morning, everyone. So one wise woman told me once that if you want to learn how people go through different diseases, the best way to learn about that is actually talking to someone who lived through that. And that's what we did, basically. So my presentation is titled A Multi-Country Look at Care and Implication of Diabetic Retinopathy Perspective of Adult with Diabetes and Healthcare Provider. And I'm going to go through that. So just to start, our project is funded by Bayer Pharmaceutical. They were involved in advising us in the beginning of the process and help us disseminate the research finding, but they were not involved in any data analysis. So this is the outline of my presentation. I'm going to tell you a little bit about diabetic retinopathy for those who may not be familiar with it. And I'll tell you about our project, the Diabetic Retinopathy Barometer Project. I'll discuss the overall research methodology, and I'll share with you the finding from the phase one of our research, the qualitative study, and end with some takeaway. And I'll share a little bit with you about what we learned in phase two of the survey. So diabetic retinopathy is a vision complication of diabetes. Actually, if your blood glucose is not controlled, it can affect the integrity of the retina, of the vessel in the retina. So with that, it can leak some fluid, can leak blood, and then that all those leakages can cause a change in the anatomy of the retina. And they are usually progress unsymptomatically. So if you have never seen your optometrist or any eye specialist before, usually if you can't just show up and then find out that you have DR and it's too late. So that's why the comprehensive eye examination is recommended at least once a year. And currently there are 93 million people worldwide that are estimated to have DR, and 28 million have vision loss from DR. And one of the important reasons why the prevalence of DR is very high throughout the world is as a result of the inadequate practice, which is related to prevention and detection and treatment of DR. So that's what we're set to do, to understand that. So the diabetic retinopathy, sorry, my leg is shaking. Just ran a marathon yesterday. So the Diabetic Retinopathy Barometer Project is a collaboration between the New York Academy of Medicine, the International Federation of Aging, the International Agency for the Prevention of Blindness, and the International Diabetes Federation. And the objective is to evaluate the level of awareness relevant to the prevention, screening, prognosis, and treatment of DR among people with diabetes and healthcare professionals, to examine practice related to clinical management of DR, to explore the availability and use of program and service that support people with DR, and to assess the social consequence of DR and vision impairment, and lastly, to develop recommendation policy as related and practice as related to DR. So our project composed of two stages. So the one that you will be hearing today is a qualitative study. We talked to adults with diabetes and also healthcare provider in 8 countries, including Argentina, Bangladesh, Germany, Japan, Mexico, Romania, Saudi Arabia, and Uganda. And these countries are selected purposefully to try to represent the world as much as possible. We select a country from different level of income, like Uganda is lower income, and Germany is definitely higher income, and the remaining are along those continuum. And the result from the qualitative study is used to inform the design of a survey that we conduct, that we just wrap up actually. And the survey was conducted in 41 countries, and again, like including people with diabetes and also healthcare professional. So this is, again, my focus on presentation today would be just qualitative study. So basically, this is the participant characteristic. And you can see that we were able to capture participants from all age group. Majority of them live in an urban setting, which is consistent with the urban population right now. Particularly for people with diabetes, we were able to talk to people at different stages of DR, from those who don't have it, to people who have DR, or those who have DME, diabetic macular edema, which is a further complication of DR. And for healthcare provider, we were able to talk to people who actually provide diabetes service, which include primary care provider, diabetes educator, endocrinologist, and people who provide service for eye services, basically ophthalmologist, retinal specialist. So four big themes came up that I would like to share with you. So the first one is impact of diabetic retinopathy and vision impairment. So visual loss definitely impact daily life, something that you and I think that is something that we can do unobstructively. It's basically a barrier for people who have vision loss from DR. Like they can't cook properly, they can't clean, read, write, drive. Actually, driving is one of the biggest barrier that people mention, people who have DR. And having DR also, it also affects someone's ability to perform diabetes management. So the two quotes that I selected here, I just want to show you that this is not a problem of just low income country but it's basically everywhere. So the first quote is from Saudi Arabia. It said, "The most important issue to me is driving now. I always avoid very crowded street and the high road where the strong car light can really affect my driving ability. If it's not necessary, I really don't go out in the evening." So the second quote is from Germany. This is basically describing someone's inability to perform diabetes management. "The pump I use is not barrier-free. I can trigger a bolus on my own. This is, of course, the minimum that you should be able to do as a diabetic person who try to control their own diabetes. I can recognize that if the reservoir is almost empty or if the battery is low, and that is what I can see from the pump." I think what she was trying to say is that she basically hear the beep. She can't really see the indication from the pump. And other things that we also hear as related to the impact of DR is that a lot of patients actually, they told us that they're forced to retire early. Usually people can retire into 60, or some people go 70, but a lot of people with DR actually they were forced to retire by their 30s or 40s, and that also increased their reliance on government and also their family members. So another theme that comes up is a knowledge as related to diabetic retinopathy. So approximately 20% of people who we talked to said that they actually don't know that vision can be a complication of diabetes. And among those who know, some of them are not clear as how that is possible or how that affects them. But one thing that comes up consistently, which is of concern, is that even though they know that vision impairment, vision issue can be a complication of diabetes, it's not motivated them enough without any symptom. Like, why would you go to a doctor if your eye is perfectly fine? But so that's the one thing that was a biggest concern. And so the two quotes here, one is from Saudi Arabia and the other is from Japan. Yes, doctor told me frankly that I should go and examine my eye and meticulously follow up with optometrist. However, as I mentioned, I did not obey at the beginning. Sometimes I would just lie to him and say, yes, I did. Only when I feel a problem, I started follow up meticulously. So that's from Saudi Arabia. In Japan, the primary care provider told us, If the patient have no problem in the visual function, how can I explain the need to see the optometrist from the prevention point of view and sacrifice their time in everyday living to have such medical service and to obtain an agreement from the patient? Reality is there is a case when they do not agree or that they say maybe next time. So as we know that referral is definitely important to link people from diabetes patient to eye service. So that's what we hear. So basically the primary care provider and diabetes specialist actually refer their patient regularly, but as consistent what I mentioned to you related to the being unmotivated. So they say that it's hard for them to make their patient comprehend like why they have to go. So one of the two quotes I selected here, one is from Uganda. The ophthalmologist mentioned, those who were referred, they do not come until they are not see. They are not able to see. Otherwise, they say, I was told 5 years ago, but I was seeing. I did not come. They wait for vision problem, then come. For the ER, it is late. From the optometrist from Romania mentioned, we are trying to draw their attention to the need of periodic ophthalmologic examination. Sorry, but unfortunately, we do not succeed 100% of time. Every time, a lot of our patients do not understand why they need to come, even if they do not have anything with their eyes. And among provider who try to make a referral, insufficient access to service, definitely the main complaint that they have. So for among those who have DR, what do you do? But just to give you a little bit of knowledge, most people with DR actually not true. There's a large chunk of people with DR that don't need treatment. If they have a mild stage of non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy, which is basically the first two stage of DR continuum, you usually are recommended to control your diabetes, control your blood glucose to prevent the progression of DR. So not everyone actually needs service, but among those who need service, they describe a variety of service that they receive, from laser to eye surgery to anti-VEGF injection, and they report success and suboptimal outcome. Like this is again, like we talk people in 8 countries, so these outcomes definitely different. For provider, their concern regarding treatment varies. So I'm going to read this four. So high treatment costs and lack of coverage for a particular service, equipment shortage, insufficient guidance related to optimal treatment protocol, difficulty treating patient with poor understanding of their illness as well as their presenting for care too late with poorly controlled diabetes. So I select these four barriers, but I'm not gonna read through the quote just for the sake of time. But basically these are the main barriers that we found consistently throughout the areas of the world. So availability of service. Actually, I'm going to read this one. It's kind of interesting. So this is the person from Saudi Arabia. It say, the doctor then told me that I need laser shot and intraocular injection. However, the drug is not available and that I need to go to Riyadh, which is the capital of Saudi Arabia. Then I decided to go to Jordan instead because it's more convenient for me. It's kind of hard to, like, we live here and I feel like if someone tell me to go to Canada to get certain service, it's kind of hard to comprehend that, but it's actually happening in other part of the world. And wait time is definitely an issue. It can go up to 6 months for certain service, and cost and payment, which usually are the main obstacle for people to get care, and travel, which is sort of related to availability of service. Okay. So just some takeaway. These are, I think, the smallest number of takeaway that I can give you today. So people with diabetes, there need to be more expanded education and outreach to ensure optimal uptake of eye screening and utilization of treatment on a timely basis. For a provider, there need to be better integration between primary care diabetes service and eye service to facilitate timely uptake of diagnostic and treatment service. And for healthcare system, as I mentioned to you before, cost is basically the main barrier. So if there is a way to make it to expand the coverage so that the cost for this screening and treatment can be covered so that it's not a barrier for people to be able to take care of themselves and their vision, that would be amazing. And finally, just to wrap up, I just want to share with you the data from phase two of the survey that we conducted. I believe total we probably have 5,000 responses from 36 countries actually. So 2/3 of providers believe that late diagnosis is the biggest challenge they face in treating diabetic retinopathy. More than 1/4 of patients say that they have not had eye examination within the past 2 years. Less than 1 in 3 patients were screened in time. Over 1 in 4 patients say the cost is a barrier to eye examination. Nearly 2 in 5 patients report long wait time for appointment. Nearly half of the patients feel lack of knowledge is the biggest barrier to eye examination. More than half of provider know limited access to patient education as a barrier to improve patient outcome. Around 1 in 6 patients only discuss symptom when they already have it, and nearly 1 in 8 actually never discuss complications with their physician at all. So again, I'd like to thank everyone that were involved in this project. One of them is sitting in the room, Maya. And again, it's a very difficult project for us because we work throughout. These are people in 4 different time zones, so it's very difficult for me to learn. And just to let you know that our report is probably coming out in probably 2 or 3 months. So if you need more information that's related to this project, feel free to contact me. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chandra. So we do have about 15 minutes for questions to any of our speakers. So I'd like to open up the room for questions. Yes, you in the back.
Issue that needs further study because Some of the factors that are going to affect that are proximity to their home country, the border, or Mexican immigrants, whether they're undocumented, that's going to impact their ability to return to home country for care. So it's definitely an issue that people have tried to look at and spend a very great success. The first comment, we did look at length of residency among immigrants. And the issue there is limited sample size, since you're basically restricting the regression to immigrants, and we have this white solution. But we didn't find any statistically significant differences for length of residency among immigrants. We suspect that with more data, that length of residency would be an important factor of considering that for a variety of behaviors, cooperation is a big, an important factor. And so over time, immigrants tend to look more and more in terms of health behaviors like U.S. neighbors. So yeah, that is an important consideration. Good questions.
Are there any other questions?
My question is for Dr. Chakta. One of the problems is the long waiting time, 5 to 6 months, because the practitioner and the physician are provider. So in your study, what's the recommendation to such countries? Because in my state, there are some groups, patient care givers, even from India, that are giving the specific hospital to have reduced this long waiting. So what would be done to such countries? 5 to 6 months is a long waiting time. So what's your recommendation for such places to have?
Actually, that's a good question. I actually don't know. But
did you have a question?
Yeah, for the vaccine in Nigeria, my question is also to the presenter from Taiwan. You have 3,000, about 3,000 subjects. Your baseline was for about 1,000 of them. I was wondering why you didn't have the baseline for all of them, because I mean, you need to have the basis to the result. Big analysis and then comes to a conclusion. So I really have some feelings.
Thank you for your question. At first, we want to recruit 3,000 kids, but recently in Taiwan, they're transforming the very strict IRB policy. So because we are from the hospital, so we needed to give the parents the very thick paper for the informed consent. So the parents, so at first the parents want to join the study. At first we have preliminary informed consent in one school, the 100% participant. But after we give the really approved informed consent, the participant rate are decreased around half. So because in Taiwan, it's, in our institute, it's very strange that the stamp, they're showing that it is the clinical trial. So therefore, the parents, they are just only psychographic reflections why we should join a clinical trial study. So the participant rate decreased. But we have some method to, so we want to see the what the difference between the vision impairment between the persistent and not persistent. There was no significant difference. So we want to show that there was no difference between these two groups. So can you understand my answer?
Yeah,
so the analysis was especially based on those who were who accepted to participate. So if someone accepted to participate, I mean, did not possess such traits, you don't have a baseline for that category of we have in Taiwan, it's very special that we have every semester. The school nurse will have the vision screen for every student. So therefore, we got the vision acuity data from the school because the school participant. Yeah, because in the world, I think there was no other country have this regular every half year a vision screen in the school system.
Once, I mean that's the permission is
okay.
Are there any other questions? Yes.
People in the ground to participate, we collaborate with international organization with that have a lot of members organization. So they it's like a couple of steps. So they find people to complete the survey then online.
Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you to all our presenters, and thank you for attending our session.